Afterward, wichoye ihanke. The people. My earliest recollections are of hearing Lakota spoken by my parents and grandparents. The first stories I heard were of Lakota people, of exciting and fascinating events that gave substance, dimension, and affirmation to everyone around me, my Lakota parents, grandparents, and relatives. There was no other way for me to be or think in those childhood years. Looking back on that time, I understand that the innocence of childhood told me I was living in a Lakota world. The Lakota were and are part of the largest indigenous nation on the northern plains of North America. The other two-thirds of the alliance are the Dakota and the Nakota, located east of the Missouri River in what is now South Dakota. The Lakota are west of the Missouri. The three words Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota have the same meaning, an alliance of friends. They represent geographic as well as linguistic distinctions. Numerous strong linguistic similarities between the two eastern groups suggest that they were one group several hundred years ago, and there are enough differences between the two eastern dialects and Lakota to suggest that there were two different languages at one time, one spoken by the Dakota and Nakota, and another spoken by the Lakota. This was, of course, before the three names were coined. It is likely that these two separate groups met, formed an alliance, and over time evolved one language with three separate dialects. We know that the three groups as one nation were in the Great Lakes area until the late 1600s. The Ojibwe, also known as the Chippewa and the Anishinaabe, who had a more convivial economic relationship with the French, acquired firearms and drove us west. As a matter of fact, because of the Ojibwe, we are probably better known to the world as the Sioux. The Ojibwe called us Nadawasu, which probably means little snakes or little enemies. The French, probably the voyageurs, shortened the word to Sioux. The word has a significant place in the contemporary names by which we are known: Rosebud Sioux, Cheyenne River Sioux, Standing Rock Sioux, and so on. The Dakota are composed of four subgroups, and the Nakota have two. My direct ancestors, the Lakota, are composed of seven subgroups, often called Ocheti Shalkoi, which is the seven fires or the seven council fires. Those subgroups and the meanings of their names, as well as any contemporary designations, are Ogallala, to scatter, Pine Ridge Sioux, Sicharu, burnt thigh, Rosebud Sioux, Lower Brule Sioux, Hunkpapa, those who camp on the inn, Standing Rock Sioux, Manikanju, those who plant by the water, Cheyenne River Sioux, Oohenupe, two boilings or two kettles, Itazipachola, without bows, and Sihasapa, black feet, black souls. As the Allied people moved west from the Great Lakes, the Dakota settled in the area that is now roughly southwestern Minnesota, northeastern South Dakota, and southeastern North Dakota. The names for those two states are taken from the Dakota dialect of our language. The Nakota established a territory that encompassed southeastern South Dakota and a small portion of northeastern Nebraska. Both groups apparently found the climate and topography east of the Missouri River quite conducive to their semi-sedentary agrarian lifestyles. The Lakota, meanwhile, pushed west across the Missouri onto the open prairies. In fact, they became known to the eastern groups as Titoan Oyate, which means the people of the open or dwellers on the prairie. Lakota territory eventually stretched west from the Missouri River to the Bighorn Mountains and north from the North Platte River to the Yellowstone River. In our language, those landmarks are respectively Menishoshe, the Great Muddy River, Hewiakpa, the Shining Mountains, Pankeskawakpa, the Shell River, and Hechakawakpa, the Elk River. My ancestors had lived a woodlands lifestyle in the Great Lakes area, more than likely for several generations. On the open prairies of the northern plains, they returned to the nomadic hunting lifestyle they had probably known earlier. Euro-Americans are quick to say that the arrival of the horse around 1680 was the turning point that changed the semi-sedentary Lakota into nomads. My ancestors were nomadic hunters before the arrival of the horse. The horse only enhanced an already established lifestyle. My mother's Lakota people are Sichangu, which means burnt thigh. A small extended family group of Lakota people was traveling on foot because they didn't yet have horses, across the prairie in late summer, more than likely to relocate their camp. A prairie fire, probably started by lightning and whipped by the winds, raced across the grasslands. The travelers attempted to outrun the flames without success, so they made a fateful decision. Running back through the fire, they decided, was the best course of action under the circumstances, and so they did. There were injuries, of course, and some deaths. Some of the very young and the very old were overcome by the heat and smoke, but most of the people survived. Many of them suffered terrible burns, especially on their upper legs, on their thighs. Thereafter, they called themselves the Burnt Thigh People. From my mother's side, I am Burnt Thigh or Sichangu. From my father's side, I'm Ogallala. The horse fit in perfectly with the nomadic lifestyle. The logical and eventual consequences were an expansion of territory, larger dwellings, horses could carry much bigger loads than dogs, and larger families. By the mid-1800s, we were probably about 15,000 strong, the largest group on the northern plains. We developed a more exciting way to hunt the bison, of course, and evolved into some of the finest light cavalry in the world. We were a horse nation and proud of it. Consider the song of a Lakota warrior to his war horse. My friend, my brother, carry me forth when the sun rises. Let my courage be as great as yours. Let us move like the wind to defend the helpless ones. We shall go forth as one to meet that which awaits. Should I see the sun set tomorrow, it shall be your victory. And I will sing songs of you, and you shall wear ribbons of red. In fact, we and other tribes of the plains were so readily identified with our horses that a white observer was compelled to comment. Every Indian male has six legs, two of his own, and four belonging to his horse. He does everything from his horse and gets down only to dance or to die, and would probably prefer to do both on horseback. Horses became so much a part of Lakota lifestyle that each family owned at least a few, some more than others, of course. There evolved a system of specialized use, though most of a family's horses were used for basic transportation or for hauling household goods. Everyone learned to ride at an early age. Horses were so valuable, they became a medium of trade, but their greatest value was as war mounts and buffalo hunting horses. Each was a distinctly separate discipline, and specific traits were sought for each use. War horses needed a calm disposition, in addition to speed and endurance, and were trained to do specific tasks, such as dragging his rider away from harm when he was unhorsed in battle. Buffalo hunters had to have breakaway speed and were taught to overcome their inherent fear of buffalo. Both kinds of horses were given years of training until they could respond to their rider's cues, primarily leg pressure and weight shift, without the aid of a rein of any kind. Thus, it was not uncommon for a buffalo hunting horse to take his rider to a specific buffalo, maintaining a close distance to give his rider the opportunity for a bow shot, while both were racing at about 30 miles an hour. Horses enhanced the Lakota lifestyle and became an inseparable part of our identity. Without them, we would not have been able to resist the encroachment of Euro-Americans for as long as we did. Without them, our history would have been drastically different. A cornerstone of Lakota culture can be summed up in the words family and kinship. Family is the backbone, the foundation of our culture. We're given substance, nurtured, and sustained by family. Kinship goes beyond family and is the connection we feel to the world at large and everything in it. Given the concept of family, it isn't difficult to understand the idea of kinship with other forms of life. Everything was of the earth. We all came from it one way or another and returned to it when life was over. These were the unalterable realities that connected us to everything around us.